Thank you for attending today's webinar, Take a Swipe at Your Measuring Process. Hello, I'm your presenter, George Schutz, Director of Precision Gauges at Marr Incorporated, Providence, Rhode Island. I hope you enjoy today's seminar, and let's begin. Our goals today are to talk about measuring versus gauging, and we're going to learn what swipe is in regards to the measuring process. So let's take a look at measuring versus gauging. Measurement is the process of determining a dimension of a part by comparison with internal standards. That's called a measuring instrument. While gauging is the process of determining whether the dimension of a part is smaller or larger as compared to an external standard. So these are called comparative instruments. And while they may sound pretty similar, there is a big distinction in their performance. So measuring instruments use an internal scale and measure the part compared to the internal standard. So thus, they have the standard built in. They're relatively slow and require more skill for accurate measurements, but they are very versatile and can measure a wide range of dimensions and types of parts. Generally, though, they have greater measurement uncertainties because they have more operator involvement in the measuring process. So your typical measuring instruments, the ones that have the scale built in, are scales themselves, micrometers, calipers, but we can move up from a measuring hand tool to a bench-mounted system such as height gauges, shop floor length measuring machines, or even laboratory-grade universal measuring machines. So on the hand tool side, you know, they take a lot of operator skill, but you can build into them some very accurate scales and work your way all the way up to laboratory-based universal measuring machines, which can be very good, but still involve an operator who is skilled for that machine. Gauging instruments or comparative instruments, they're the ones that use the process of determining whether the dimension of a part is smaller or larger as compared to an external standard. So these comparative instruments use an external standard to set them up. That could be a gauge block, a master ring, or a disc. But these types of gauging instruments tend to be faster and more accurate. They're more dedicated to the task. They're adjusted to a specific size. They have references to put parts against. So they will be more accurate compared to a lot of measuring instruments. And I think that there's three types of gauging instruments or comparative type instruments. And these are the fixed gauges. Then we have variable gauges, gauges that can be adjusted to a specific size. And then we have the fixed variable gauges. These are gauges that are made to a specific dimension and thus offer the best performance. So let's take a look at each one of these. The first one is our fixed gauging instruments. And these are your master rings and discs, the ones that are made go, no-go type of measurement. They're very fast, but they don't offer any deviations. They just tell you whether the part is good. If that pin goes into the hole, well, it's probably good. So they don't give you any information about the part form. They just made for a specific size, and that's all they do. So, you know, they're a relatively low investment, but they do have some cost of maintaining them, storing them, and recertification process. And usually two masters are required for each dimension that you're going to be checked, the go and the no-go, or the min or the max. So these are very fast and easy to use gauging instruments, but they don't tell you anything about the dimension that you're making other than it's good or bad. A little better process in the gauging instruments is the variable gauging instrument. So these are gauges that are made to measure IDs or ODs, and they're adjustable to a specific size. So they have lots of adjustable range, but they have a very limited measuring range. So these provide, because they have a digital readout on them, they provide actual deviations from the master. So now you can learn something about the form, the process trends, and maybe diagnose some manufacturing issues. They are fast, easy to use because they're set to a specific size. And initially, they can be a little bit of an investment, but with proper care, these gauges can last for decades if well maintained. And of course, you need a master for every specific size that you're going to be measuring. So you do have the cost with that. But these are generally fast, good to the tighter tolerances, your typical adjustable bore gauges, ID, OD gauges, etc. Now, the very best in types of gauging instruments are the fixed variable gauging instruments. These are things like fixed plug gauges, air plugs, for example. They are made to a specific size, and they have a limited measuring range. So now you have some variable data. So these gauges will be the most accurate. They provide actual deviations. So now you can learn something about the part that you're measuring. Because they're made to a specific size, they have the least operator influence. All the operator has to do is put that fixed plug into the hole, for example. There's no room for him to move that gauge around. It's made for that specific size, and he's going to get the best results. So now, because you have deviations, you can learn about the form, the process trends, and diagnose manufacturing issues. So least operator influence and the fastest gauge to use with the best results. So these tend to be a little bit more on the investment side because they are made to a specific size, but they can, again, last for decades if they're well maintained. And again, you're going to need a master for every size that you're going to be measuring. So they're made for a specific size, and they can give you the best performance. So your gauging instruments, or these comparative instruments using external standards, are things like snap gauges, adjustable bore gauges, fixed bore plugs, ID-OD gauges. With the right type of structure, you can get some very good results. Gauge block comparators, for example, are comparative type gauges, and they measure down to parts of a millionth of an inch. So they can be very good because that gauge is dedicated to a specific size, but like a gauge block comparator can measure all the sizes within that gauge block set that you're measuring. So again, these provide the best performance in terms of making comparative measurements. Now, whether you're measuring or for whether you're gauging, there's really a measuring process going on. So let's take a look at what the measuring process is. Now, there's a logical sequence to the operation when used to perform a measurement. The sequence is a process that I think consists of at least five different elements, and each one has their own influence on the measuring process. Now, you can envision a person on the shop floor either using a caliper or a comparative type measuring instrument. And if you think about it and look at that process, there are at least five parts to that process. And let's think about those five parts. The first one with the comparative gauging instrument is the standard or the master itself. So the standard is the first part of the measuring process. Then we have the parts that are going to be measured, the work pieces. They have a part of the, they're a part of the process, and they can influence the results of the measuring process. Then we have the instrument itself, or the gauging instrument itself. It's a big part of the measuring process, and one that can help to determine how good that process is. Then we have the people. The user of the gauging instrument is a big part of that process. And then finally, the environment. The environment probably has the biggest influence on the process, and we're going to take a look at that in a bit here. So we have the standard, the workpiece, the instrument, the people, and the environment. So, you know, you think about it, the measurement is just more than putting a part in the gauge. It has to put all these five things together. And if you think of that as an acronym and take the first letter from each one of those words, the standard, the workpiece, the instrument, the people, and the environment, and you put that together and you have SWIPE. So we're going to take a look at SWIPE and how that influences the measuring process. So the first one is the standard or the master. Now, when we think about masters, we think about gauge blocks or master rings or discs or pins or so forth. But when you're using these, you know, they have to be clean. They should be in good condition. You don't want any nicks or chips taken out of them or burrs on them. Hopefully they're the same material as the part. You know, gauge blocks are steel and most work pieces are steel, so having them the same material reduces on, you know, things expand at different materials expand at different temperatures. By having everything steel, everything will be consistent. They should be the same temperature as the workpiece that we're measuring. You know, you don't want to take a gauge block set from the lab at 68 degrees and bring it out to the shop, which might be 75 degrees, because those masters are going to take a while to stabilize, which can influence your measuring results. Your masters should be recently certified, and you should know what their size and form is. Good condition again. And again, most standards are made to a national standard. So masters are made to ANSI standard or ASME standards or DIN standards. So gauge blocks are made to a standard. Rings and discs are made to a standard. So it's good to have them certified and made to the standard. The next part of the SWIPE process, the W, is the workpiece or the part itself. Again, kind of like the masters, they need to be clean, same material, good condition. You know, you don't want any oils or greases or chips or coolant on the workpiece. You don't want to take them off of a warm manufacturing process where they've been ground or turned and they're hot. You want them to stabilize. And you should understand the form and the finish and how that might affect the measuring process. And you should also be concerned about any special characteristics of the part. Are they thin-walled or are they compressive material? Or is that dimension we're making a groove somewhere? Because that can affect the gauging choice to make the proper measurement. So let's think about how the workpiece can affect the measuring process. Now, diameters or inside diameters or outside diameters are usually turned or they can be milled or ground and so forth. And each one of those measuring processes influences the form of that part. So most parts have a two-point lobing condition. You know, there's a min and a max value in that diameter, and usually a two-point measuring system, such as an adjustable bore gauge or a caliper or a fixed plug gauge, has two contacts, and those gauges will easily find the min and the max diameter. So a two-point gauge is great for an even lobed condition because there's two lobes, a min and a max, and that two-point gauge will find that dimension. Now, what if you take a centerless grinding operation or a part that's held with a three-jaw chuck, for example? Well, those types of processes will tend to create an odd number of lobes on the part. The forces of the jaws will deflect it a little bit, and now you'll get a three-lobe condition in that part. Now, that two-point measuring system isn't going to see those three lobes. It's going to look at and find what it thinks is the average diameter. So that part will look very round with a two-point measuring system. Now you try and take that part and match it up with a mating part that has a very tight tolerance to that one. Well, they may not fit because there might be a minimum diameter on that three-lobe part that's not going to mate with its matching part. So now you're going to have parts that don't fit together. You don't know why. It's all because there's a form error in that part. So once you take a form trace of that part, you'll see that you'll have a tri-lobe condition, and now you have to go find a gauge that can measure that. So air plugs, for example, can have three jets. They can find that tri-lobe condition. Or there's other ways to understand and measure that part. So the workpiece can, through its geometry, affect the measuring size. So that's another reason why swipe might help us improve the measuring process. The third part of the measuring process is the instrument, the eye, or the gauge itself. Now, you know, gauges are a part of the process, and people often look at the gauge as the reason why it's not making the measurement. But again, it's only one-fifth of the measuring process. So while it's one-fifth, it can influence the measuring process. So, you know, gauges, you want them mechanically sound, you want them sturdy, you want them to the proper resolution of the tolerance that you're making. You want as little operator influence from the measuring instrument as much as possible. You know, for tighter tolerances like, you know, gauge block comparators or ball comparators or stands, you want that to be a large mass because mass adds stability. It reduces the amount of thermal work on that machine and so forth. So a good stable gauge is important for very tight tolerances. Sometimes gauges are made to a standard. Gauge block comparators are made to a standard. Or you're trying to measure some compressible material. Those gauges tend to be made to a standard, having a fixed contact diameter, a fixed weight of the contact. All of those are made to a standard so that you get better results between measuring places. And you want that gauge to take into account any special part characteristics. So if you're measuring thin walls or inside grooves and so forth, you want that gauge capable of making that measurement. So the instrument is the third part of the swipe process. Now, how can the instrument influence the measurement? Well, if we think about air gauging, for example, air gauging uses back pressure of the air to make the dimensional check. And that air jet is about 50 thousandths in diameter, so you have to restrict the jet to make your measurement. So that air jet is filling in and pushing against the side of the inside diameter and filling in any peaks and valleys that might be part of the surface finish to get its dimension. Now, if you think of a fixed plug gauge or an adjustable bore gauge, They use contacts to actually touch the part. And those contacts are really riding on the peaks only of the surface finish. So they might tend, if you have a very rough condition, to measure a little bit smaller than an air gauge might, because that air gauge has to fill in the valleys from the peaks. So it might think that the surface is a little bit below what the peaks really are. So if you have a rough surface finish, you have to take that into consideration if you're trying to use an air gauge. So if you're measuring very tight tolerance parts, you need to understand and know the surface finish of that part, because that will tend to influence the gauge, or potentially influence the gauge making the measurement. So the fourth part of the measuring process is the people, or the P in swipe. So, you know, ideally, let's think about the example of people in measurement centers or in the quality lab in a shop. You know, that lab is usually in the back corner or in the basement of the building. It's a controlled environment, which is cool for some people. They're all working together the same way all day long. They probably don't get to see very many people except for the people that they work with. So, you know, you have to have a certain emotional standard when you're working in that type of environment. You have to have an even temperament, be emotionally stable. You know, you have to take pride in your work, because, you know, those can be life and death measurements that you're going to be making. So these standards that are gauges that are used in the aerospace industry or medical instruments, these could be some pretty important checks. So you have to be a perfectionist, have good judgment when you think something is wrong, to go ahead and make that measurement over again. And if you made a half a day making measurements and something just doesn't seem right, and you know you're going to have to take it over again, well, you have to have a sense of humor about that. So, you know, it takes a unique type of person to work in a millionth measurement center, for example. Now, I think that, you know, people who have worked in submarines make a great person to work in a metrology lab. You know, they work with the same people, they're isolated, but they're doing life and death types of activities. So if you worked in a submarine, maybe you have the skills to be a dimensional lab technician. Now, the final part of the measuring process, number five, is the environment. And the environment is probably the largest contributor to our measuring errors. You know, in a lab, there's really lots of temperature gradients going on and sources of temperature. You know, a person is about equal to a 100-watt light bulb giving off heat. You have lights. You have air conditioning systems creating drafts and so forth. So, you know, typically there's going to be a temperature gradient where it's going to be warmer at the top of the room than it is near the floor of the room. And you have lots of air being circulated around there. So people have to be aware of these temperature gradients, especially when they're making millionth types measurement. And vibration is part of that environment also. If you're trying to make very precise surface finish checks, well, you have to be worried about vibration coming in from the outside environment. So great steps can be taken to reduce those vibration issues, like creating big concrete slabs or trying to isolate that concrete slab from the building, having the gauges attached to the concrete slab, but people work on a suspended floor above it. Everything in the way of trying to reduce environmental issues. So we want an environment that's free of vibration. You need to have it clean and controlled humidity so that, you know, it's comfortable for people to work, but not too moist to have gauges start rusting on you and so forth. And of course, you have to have a constant temperature where the gauges are always maintained at the same temperature. So that's what swipe is. And if you think about the standard, the workpiece, the instrument, the people, and the environment, now, which ones do you really have some control over? Well, you can control the standard. You can establish a good process for maintaining these standards, annual recertification, storing them properly, etc. You can control the standards. Workpieces, well, they tend to be a little bit uncontrollable. Now, you can try and, you know, with the manufacturing process, limit the outside factors and get the best machine, but still, there's always going to be a little variation in that measuring process. You can try and control it, but it really comes down to what the machine can do. The instrument could be controllable. You can have a good design, have it qualified, and have it maintained. So you can ensure and test what the really performance of that measuring is. And if you can recheck it all the time, you know what it is. People can tend to be uncontrollable. Now, while you can document the process, there's always that human factor, and people can make mistakes, they have bad days, so they can be an uncontrollable part of the measuring process. And the environment's uncontrollable. Now, you can try and build the best labs that there are with the best temperature control, but there's always going to be some gradients, a little bit of vibration, and those users' influences. So while there's five parts of the measuring process, the ones that you really have the best control over are the standards and the instrument. So you think about swipe, the standard, the workpiece, the instrument, the people, and in the environment. If every time you're thinking about swipe, there's things that you can learn from it. Well, you get a better understanding of each one of these elements when you think about what you're measuring and that whole measuring process. You can find out where your biggest sources of errors are. Now that you can also document them because you have variable gauges. You can record the values. You can record the time that they're made, who made them, and you can document each one of those measuring processes. It's also fun for the operator to get involved in the process. Sometimes they have some pretty good ideas about, you know, where the gauge is or how it's used or how they can get the best results out of it. So use the operator to improve the measuring process. If you keep records of that process, you're able to track the gauging life, and maybe you can also predict when you might have to service or repair that measuring instrument. So swipe can do that for you. And you can improve the whole measuring instrument is to try and make that as small as part of the process as possible. So you can look at each part and try and reduce its influence on swipe and that measuring process. So I think in summary today, you know, we've talked about the differences between measuring and gauging, which one could be a little bit faster, which one is the easiest for the operator to use. We have learned about the five parts of the measuring process: the swipe principle, the standard, the workpiece, the instrument, the people, and the environment. And we've discussed how swipe can be used to improve not only our measurements, but also we can use that to improve the manufacturing process as well. So remember swipe, if you ever have a gauging issue and something doesn't seem right, well, it could be the instrument, but it could be one of those five parts of the measuring process: the standard, the workpiece, the instrument, the people and the environment. So thank you for your attention today. I think we've talked about some very basic points, but these basic points can have a big influence on your measuring process.